Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, and don't eat that, your pet's tongue, taste buds, eating and drinking habits, and we'll hear about what Oscar the Blind Cat is up to. From Stanley Corin, PhD, FRSC, at the Canine Corner, how good is your dog's sense of taste? In a taste sensitivity contest with dogs, humans clearly win. If you believe the dog food commercials on television and in magazines, dogs are very sensitive to taste, but you may be surprised at the reality. Taste is a very old sense in evolutionary terms. It evolved from direct interactions of the first living things with the giant bowl of chemical soup in which they were immersed. The substances that were suspended or dissolved in water were important to the survival of these primitive living things. Some substances provided food, some gave warning, and some could cause damage or even kill. As animals evolved, the taste system became more specialized and sophisticated. Sensations of pleasure and disgust provided by taste serve a survival function. A reasonable rule of thumb, at least for natural substances, is that bad tastes are a signal that the animal has encountered something that is harmful, indigestible, or poisonous, while good tastes signal useful, digestible substances. Because it is important for survival, it is not surprising to find that taste is one of the earliest senses to begin functioning in dogs. Young puppies seem to have only their sense of touch, taste, and smell working at birth, but the taste sense still requires a few weeks to completely mature and sharpen. As in the case of humans, the dog's sense of taste depends upon special receptors called taste buds. These are found in small bumps on the top surface of the tongue called papillae. There are some taste buds in other places as well, such as the soft part of the roof of the mouth, the palate, and the back part of the mouth where the throat begins, the epiglottis and the pharynx. In animals, taste sensitivity depends upon the number and type of taste buds that it has, much the same way that sensitivity for smell depends on the number of olfactory receptors. Humans win the sensitivity contest for taste with around 9,000 taste buds, as compared with only 1,700 for the dog. But dogs have considerably more taste buds than cats, which average only about 470. Specific taste buds appear to be tuned to specific chemical groups and produce recognizable tastes. Traditionally, when talking about human tastes, we have identified four basic taste sensations. These correspond to the tastes that we call sweet, salty, sour, and bitter. Early research did show that the taste receptors of dogs responded to the same kind of chemicals that trigger human taste sensations. There was one clear difference, however, and that has to do with the taste of salt. Humans and many other mammals have a strong taste response to salt. We seek it out and like it on our food. Pretzels, potato chips, and popcorn, for example, are snack foods that are usually liberally dosed with salt. Salt is needed to balance our diet, and there's not much of it to be found in vegetables and grains. Dogs, however, are primarily carnivores, and in the wild, most of their food is meat. Because of the high sodium content in meat, the wild ancestors of dogs already had a sufficient amount of salt in their diet and did not develop our highly tuned salt receptors and the strong craving for salt. Dogs are not exclusively carnivorous, but are usually classified as omnivores, meaning that they eat not only meat, but plant material as well. Nonetheless, in the wild, more than 80% of a canine's diet will be meat. For this reason, in addition to sensors for sweet, salt, sour, and bitter, dogs also have some specific taste receptors that are tuned for meats, fats, and meat-related chemicals. Dogs will tend to seek out and clearly prefer the taste of things that contain meat or flavors extracted from meat. The sweet taste buds in dogs respond to a chemical called furanial. This chemical is found in many fruits and in tomatoes. Cats are virtually taste blind for this substance. It appears that dogs do like this flavor, and it probably evolved because in a natural environment, dogs frequently supplement their diet of small animals with whatever fruits happen to be available. The taste buds for the basic flavors are not distributed equally across the tongue. Sweet is best tasted at the front and side portion of the tongue. The sour and salty taste buds are also on the sides, but further back, with the salt responding area being rather small. The rear portion of the tongue is most sensitive to bitter tastes. Sensitivity to meaty tastes is scattered over the top of the tongue, but mostly found in the front two-thirds. However, all areas of the tongue can respond to all of the taste stimuli if they are strong enough. It is just that the areas that I mentioned are noticeably more sensitive. Because of dogs' dislike of bitter taste, various sprays and gels have been designed to keep dogs from chewing on furniture or other objects. These compounds often contain such bitter substances as alum or various substances derived from hot peppers. Coating items with such bitter-tasting material will eventually keep most dogs from chewing on them, but the key word is eventually. Part of the problem is that the taste buds that sense bitter are located on the rearmost third of the tongue. This means that a quick lick or a fast gulp will not register the bitter taste. Only prolonged chewing will let the bitter work its way back to where it can be tasted. Dogs also have taste buds that are tuned for water, which is something they share with cats and other carnivores, but it is not found in humans. This taste sense is found at the tip of the dog's tongue, which is the part of the tongue that he curls to lap water. This area responds to water at all times, but when the dog has eaten salty or sugary foods, the sensitivity to the taste of water increases. The guess is that this ability to taste water evolved as a way for the body to keep internal fluids in balance after the animal has eaten things that will either result in more urine being passed or will require more water to adequately process. This is useful since dogs are carnivores, and as we already mentioned, there is a high salt content in meat. It certainly appears that when these special water taste buds are active, dogs seem to get an extra pleasure out of drinking water and will drink copious amounts of it. Stanley Korn, PhD, is a professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia and is the author of many books, including Born to Bark, The Modern Dog, Why Do Dogs Have Wet Noses, The Paw Prints of History, How Dogs Think, How to Speak Dog, and several others. Next, how appealing is your cat's water? Cat behaviorist Pam Johnson Bennett tells us water is important to the health of your cat, and how you present and serve it can have a big influence on whether kitty drinks it or rejects it. Here are 6 tips for making sure the water you serve is appealing. First, the freshness of your cat's water. Refill the bowl with fresh water on a daily basis. Cats are very sensitive to taste, and if the water stands too long, it will start to taste stale. Food and dirt particles can accumulate in the water, which can affect taste and also create opportunities for bacteria to build up. If your cat dips his paw in the water, she is also contributing to the buildup of bacteria because that paw contains dirt, dust, and debris from having been in the litter box. Next, a clean bowl. Don't just refill the water each day without washing the bowl itself. Hair, dirt, saliva, and food can stick to the sides. Wash the bowl with mild dish soap and then thoroughly rinse all traces of soap from the bowl before refilling it with fresh water. Traces of dish soap can burn the tongue's cat's tongue and will also give the water an unpleasant taste. Next, the right bowl size and shape to match your cat. The bowl you've chosen as Kitty's water bowl may actually be working against you. Choose a bowl that is truly cat-friendly. Your cat has long whiskers on each side of her muzzle, and those whiskers are very sensitive. She doesn't want to have to squish them in order to reach the water in the bowl. If you've noticed that your cat tends to dunk her paw in the water and then lick it, the reason may be that she doesn't want to have squished whiskers. Choose a bowl that is not narrow and deep. Cats tend to prefer more shallow water and food bowls. Just make sure the shallow water bowl stays filled. The location of your cat's water bowl. Many cat parents use divided bowls so they can put food on one side and water on the other. Although this may seem as if you're doing something very convenient for the cat, it's actually not beneficial. Many cats prefer not to drink water where there is the scent of food. In between meals, your cat may prefer to be able to drink in a neutral area away from traces of food. Additionally, with the divided dishes, food particles may fall into the water, making it less appealing and allowing for the growth of bacteria. If you don't use a divided bowl, don't place the water too close to the food bowl anyway. Choose a completely separate location in the room. In our house, we have several water bowls around the house to make it very convenient for the cat. Water level. Stay consistent with maintaining the water level. Don't let it get down to the last few drops, and also don't fill it one day to the brim and then only midway the next day. Stay consistent. Some cats begin dipping their paws in the water because they aren't sure where the top of the water is on any given day. Cats like consistency in their daily routine. And make your cat's water station fun. If your cat likes to drink from the faucet or play with the water in his bowl, consider getting a pet water fountain. It's a great way to encourage your cat to drink more water. It creates some extra playtime, and the constant movement of the water keeps it more oxygenated. Even if you don't get a fountain, you can create a little water fun by periodically dropping an ice cube in the water bowl, especially on very hot summer days. And the author, Pam Johnson Bennett, is a certified cat behavior consultant and is considered a pioneer in the field of cat behavior. And you can find her at catbehaviorassociates.com. Next, natural treats that are good for your dog's teeth by Mary Beth Biddle. She writes, our dog Grant goes by a lot of names. No Grant, drop it Grant, cut it out Grant, God grant me the patience, and very occasionally, Bud. When I first adopted this little black and white ball of mischief, his foster given name was actually Granite. But that was before I noticed his ongoing playtime propensity for chewing, gnawing, and shaking things around, especially my best throw pillows, which he seems to believe require killing. I found myself intoning his name so regularly that I finally became too lazy to deal with the second syllable. Over time, I've gradually helped Grant overcome his neurotic need to nibble. Well, okay, it's probably more accurate to say I've coaxed him toward more productive options. These include nutritious snack substitutions that help keep his teeth strong while safeguarding my house. Because let's face it, dogs like to chew, and healthy teeth play a critical role. A domesticated dog's teeth share many similarities to those of wolves and coyotes in the wild. That's because in both cases, those teeth are designed to process the protein so vital to good health. Your sweet pup actually has an instinctive drive to chew, and to put it plainly, canine teeth are shaped for efficient slicing and gnawing through fibrous material. Baked kibble disintegrates into starchy paste that sticks between teeth and gums, which can lead to periodontal disease. Contrary to popular belief, kibble does nothing to scrub teeth clean. If you've been led to believe this by clever marketing campaigns, pour yourself a bowl of grape nuts or grab a granola bar. As you're chewing and swallowing, evaluate how wintry fresh your teeth actually feel. My point is that the snacks your canine consumes have a critical impact on lifelong dental well-being. Remember, too, that dental health impacts the immune system. So the foundation of any dog's diet should be natural, human-grade meat that's free of fillers, byproducts, and preservatives. But in addition to regular professional care, there are also specific snacks that can help round out a doggone good dental health plan. Here are a few to explore. Raw bones, not cooked. Cooked bones can often splinter in dangerous ways. But did you know that raw, uncooked bones contain enzymes and probiotics that can help your pup's mouth maintain an optimal balance of bacteria flora? These bones also provide a nice calcium boost, which supports strong bones and teeth. My canines are on the smallish side, but we still prefer to go with larger, humanely sourced bones that provide an extended chewing workout. Tucker's frozen bones are one well-respected raw option. If you're especially concerned about food safety, you can also try naturally smoked commercial products like Jones Center Bones. Either way, use a towel underneath to minimize messiness. Crunchy vegetables. An occasional tasty raw carrot is low in calories, yet high in vitamin A and beta-carotene. Sliced cucumber sticks in moderation are a good source of kidney-supporting potassium, and celery sticks provide fiber, folate, riboflavin, plus vitamins A, C, and K. Quick, easy, inexpensive. Frozen berries. Turns out some of these sweet little gems are actually very good for your dog's dental health. Cranberries, raspberries, and blueberries contain high concentrations of a compound called NDM, or non-dialysable material. This can help discourage the formation of plaque. A study published in the Journal of American Dental Association gave a special shout-out to cranberries, which are apparently a solid source of tannins and flavonoids that can stop problematic bacteria from sticking to teeth and gums. A research team representing both Rutgers University and the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry also found that these special compounds can thwart acid formation, thereby minimizing decay. Start with just one or two frozen berries, then monitor digestion and stools. If everything's looking good after a week, feed up to four frozen berries per 30 pounds of dog every 3 to 5 days. Green tea cubes. Green tea is full of flavonoids, antioxidants that can help fight inflammation and neutralize free radicals. Since most dogs have trouble processing caffeine efficiently, purchase plain decaffeinated green tea bags. Use 3 bags to brew up a pot of weak green tea, then freeze into ice cubes. They're great for occasional chewing and soothing the gums of teething puppies, too. Parsley cubes. That humble mini tree garnish is also actually one of the most concentrated nutrient sources around. Plus, a major bonus, its natural antimicrobial properties can help freshen doggy's breath. Try boiling 3 cups of water and placing 1/4 cup fresh parsley in a bowl. Pour the hot water on top and let everything steep for about 15 to 20 minutes. Remove the parsley with a spoon, pour the liquid into ice cube trays, and freeze for a ready supply of super cool chewing satisfaction. And sweet potato chews. Got a toaster oven? You can make these yummy, vitamin and fiber-rich chew treats in under 10 minutes. Grab a raw, scrubbed sweet potato. Keep the skin on and cut into thin slices. Place these on a cookie sheet and bake at 250 degrees Fahrenheit for about 3 hours. And there you have it. Natural treats that are good for your dog's teeth, brought to you by Dogster. And finally, Oscar the Blind Cat, rallies for special needs pets. In an interview by Jen Reeder of Catster, Oscar's adopter talks about Oscar, life with a blind cat, and the joys of helping other animals. Oscar the Blind Cat is living proof that one life can make a difference. After Mick and Bethany Sidlowski rescued Oscar as a kitten in July 2011, videos of the little blind tabby learning to play with his first toy, a ball with a bell, and fighting a hairdryer went viral. Since then, Oscar has been inspiring people to consider adopting special needs cats by appearing on TV shows such as Good Morning America, sharing information about adoptable cats on his popular social media channels, and starring in videos with his sighted BFF and fellow rescue kitty Klaus. In addition to spreading awareness that special needs cats can be terrific pets, Oscar inspires people to live life to the fullest. He visits blind children and adults in classrooms and is an honorary member of the National Federation of the Blind. His picture book series, available in Braille, won a 2016 Dr. Jacob Bulletin Award for working to improve the lives of the blind throughout the United States. In 2017, an astronaut at the International Space Station will read Oscar's latest book, Oscar and Klaus, The Mission to Cateria, to classrooms on Earth through a program called Storytime from Space. Soon an Oscar plush toy with a white cane, a symbol of independence for people with vision impairment, will hit the market for educators. As his dad quipped, Oscar is a busy little dude. We caught up with Dad, Mick Sidlowski, just before he and Oscar left for Southern California to support Walk a Mile in Our Paws, a multi-caterial and special needs cat show hosted by Milo's Sanctuary and Special Needs Cat Rescue on October 22, 2016. The nonprofit rescue organization hosts the event to spread the word that homeless cats with disabilities deserve a second chance, a cause near and dear to Sidlowski's heart. Reader asks Mick, why did you adopt Oscar? He says, I found Oscar on a small farm when he was a kitten, completely by accident. Although I was not searching for a new cat at the time, I instantly fell in love with his relaxed and happy demeanor. He was born completely blind, but he was capable of hunting bugs, running around the property, and being very playful. Living outdoors on a farm, however, has its dangers, and I decided to bring him home with me. Oscar was the first blind cat that I ever encountered. I knew nothing about raising blind animals, and I was a bit anxious about what to expect. Oscar quickly proved that it's not that much different from caring for any sighted cat. Oscar shows me daily that blindness is not what defines him. He also finds a way to get what he wants, even if it means finding an alternative method of doing so. For example, he may not jump to the top of a counter because he can't see it, but the second you leave a box or stool anywhere close to it, he climbs up in a matter of seconds and eats your lunch. He does get fan mail from people he's helped or inspired, and quite a bit of it, too. The simple act of sharing the photos and videos of his daily antics has changed the perception of many, many people around the world about what is required to have a happy pet. My perception of all special needs animals has changed because of Oscar and because of the vast social media network we built that introduced me to countless other unique cats, dogs, horses, and more. And I feel that they are all capable of a comfortable, happy, and long life with just a little bit of extra care. I no longer feel sorry or sad for special needs animals. I actually feel immense joy to see them thriving against the odds. What drew Mick to attend the Milo Sanctuary Walk a Mile in Our Paws event with Oscar? He says, I don't take Oscar out of the house too often, but knowing that his presence may attract more attention to the event makes it worthwhile for me. Milo's is helping to redefine what makes a great pet. A pedigree cat or dog from a breeder may be a model pet, but you'll never have the same adventures like you would with a special needs mutt. I want more people to see how amazing special needs animals really are, and Oscar does enjoy showing off. And the special needs cat show at the event? I would probably try to attend for that reason alone if Oscar wasn't a part of that event. Oscar does very well on the road, although he really doesn't travel much at all. He's very mellow by nature, and he feels safe when he's close to me. I would never try to sedate him or give him medication to relax him, so the key to keeping him calm is bringing a piece of home along. His travel carrier is always in the house, and it's out, and he uses it as his bed quite often. He goes on car rides through Seattle from time to time in his carrier, so he's comfortable with motion. At the event, he will probably just sleep in his big bed and gladly allow the fans to pet him too. And what advice does Mick have for someone considering adopting a cat with special needs? Make sure you can make a lifetime commitment, he says. Take the time to do research or seek advice about the unique condition of the pet, and then dive right in. You won't ever regret the decision. For more information, you can visit Oscar on his website, Facebook, and Instagram. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program, and please join me again next time for more pet fun and information. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.